You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Hello, you beautiful MFs. Today, let's talk about how to improve your memory. I'll share my thoughts on the election and also a story from my trip to Vietnam. I believe at a minimum, when you're traveling to a foreign country, you should at least learn hello and thank you in their language. So, Gam Un for tuning in today. How's that? On the last episode, I briefly discussed the origins of heroin. In the last article I wrote for manoverseas.com, I talked about how the Nazis used methamphetamine to fuel their aggression when they were trying to conquer the European continent. All this was new to me until I read Norman Ohler's Page Turner. It's called Blitzed. I won't elaborate here, but if you're so inclined and you want to learn a little more about World War II, it's worth a read. I learned a lot and wanted to share, therefore wrote the article. Plus, you learn a lot more when you write about something. Did you know the phrase stabbed in the back originated in Nazi Germany? That's true. The Nazis, they were trying to say that they had an enemy within that needed to be eradicated. And so they claimed that the only reason they lost World War I was due to, quote, backstabbers. That's a little nugget I learned from Ohler's book, but I didn't include it in the article. Oh, something else I should mention, since I'm closing loops on things that went unmentioned. Last episode, I talked about a softball team I played against in high school, and I said it was a team of white guys with a black dude named Ralph and a kid from the Orient. Remember that? Well, as I've been known to do, I went on a tangent about Asians and traveling to East Asia and Southeast Asia, but I never came back to why I told you about that team in the first place. Well, their team name was Caucasian Invasion with Ralph and an Asian. Pretty creative. Did you catch the phrase I just used, in the first place? Do you know where that comes from? Have you heard of the Memory Palace? The Memory Palace is a mnemonic device designed to help you remember things. A mnemonic device is a learning technique that helps you to remember things by what you do is associate what you're trying to remember with something that should help you to remember things easier. So you meet a guy named Mark, and he's got a birthmark on his face. You can then associate Mark with the mark on his face, and it'll help you to remember his name. By the way, I have a cousin named Mark. His friends and family call him Mawk, because they're from New Orleans, and that's how they talk. Same reason my dad's friends and family call him John, while people in Texas call him John. I'm Ronnie LaMawk, and I'm bridging the gap. Or I'm Morris Bought, and I'm on your side. Those are commercials that were played on a loop when I was a kid. And I've shared before, when I moved to Texas from Louisiana, I had to change my name because I would introduce myself. Hi, my name is what? My name is Bradley. And they'd say, look at him walking around, grabbing his you-know-what, flipping the you-know-who. Yeah, but he's so cute, though. Not really. That's Slim Shady. And even if I thought I was cute, that got quashed the first day I showed up at this giant junior high in Houston. Tell me if this would crush you or maybe it'd make you laugh. I was walking by this group of girls on the basketball team, just right outside the cafeteria. This is my first day at a brand new school. I'm in eighth grade. And this group of girls were talking in a circle. And they were a little taller than me. So I walk by and I hear one of the girls say to the group, did y'all see the new guy? He got a good body, but his face got to go. And well, my first thought was, I wonder who they're talking about. I quickly realized it was Monday, January 18th, 1994, and nobody else was starting school the day after Martin Luther King Day. That was just me. But hey, at least my daughter thinks I'm pretty. Well, actually, she only says that when she wants me to wear her jewelry. Dada, will you put on this jewelry? And I can't say no, but she thinks I'm pretty, so I got that going for me. But hey, if we all had a Bieber face, there might be no Despacito remix. And where would that leave us? So yeah, I'd say my name, but they don't hear me though. Time and time again, I'd hear, "What'd you say, Brad?" And I just got tired of correcting people. So I then decided to live my life as Brad, or man sometimes. Which isn't a bad thing to be Brad. It rhymes with Chad. And he's cool, right? Unlike Karen, who became less cool as the internet became a thing. You didn't want to be a Karen. How are things going in your life? So a memory palace could be any place that you're intimately familiar with. Like the house you grew up in, for example. Let's say you wanted to remember what the wife asked you to pick up at the grocery store. And you say, "Don't ask me to get anything in the middle aisles because it'll take me all day." Or maybe that's just me. But seriously, the wife says, "Can you get a loaf of bread, a carton of milk, and a stick of butter?" And you're like, "That's easy. You don't even need to text me that list. I got this. Loaf of bread, carton of milk, stick of butter." Then you're walking out the door and you hear, "Hey, one more thing." "Yes, dear." And she says, "You are the epitome of what a man should be. You're smart, respectable, not to mention incredibly sexy." And you're thinking, "Damn, she has never said I was smart and respectable. She must want something from the middle aisle." And she drops two more items on you. "Can you get some fava beans and paprika?" And you're thinking, I can't remember all that shit. Well, that's when it's time to go to the memory palace, which is when I think about the house I grew up in, and I start placing items around the house. So I'll tell you how that works. So you walk in the front door. The first place something is located is on the floor in the foyer, and it's a nice little loaf of bread. So you reach down, you give it a pinch, just like you would a child's cheek. Then you walk into the living room and you see the lamps, but one of the lamps is a milk carton standing erect in the corner. And you're thinking, that's weird, but you're not going to forget that. So you go in the kitchen, open the fridge, and what do you know? The only thing in there, stick of butter. Okay, so now you have just two items left on your list, the ones that are a little more difficult to remember. So you walk in the backyard, and there's paprika by the pool. And the pool, it doesn't have water. Nope, it is filled with fava beans. Now all that's easy to remember. Because you know the house you grew up in, you know it with great detail inside and out. And you just want to place things that you want to remember around the house that you know so well. And so the phrase "in the first place" comes from where the loaf of bread was when you walked in the house. It's in the first place. I mean, who can forget the first thing they did in the memory palace was to pinch a loaf? You feel me? But hey, if it's true you learn something new every day, well, that doesn't count. You've got to keep learning. Because as a wise man once said, you won't get very far in life with what you already know. Okay, some of you want me to talk about the election. I don't know where to start because there's so much to say. I had somebody ask me the other day, and I was like, "Well, can you ask me a question? Maybe I can answer." I tweeted about 10 p.m. that night, the night of the election, that, well, Donald Trump at that time was up 90%. He was at 90% on Poly Market, which is the largest betting market in the world. They had something like $4 billion bet on the presidential election. And I said we couldn't know whether Trump was going to win or not. But what we do know is that Tim Walz and Doug Imhoff are gay. How convinced am I? You watch the interview with Imhoff when he's asked how he found out about the palace coup. Not those words, but and the installation of Kamalama Lama 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 as the new candidate. This is what he said. He said, "I was at spin class with friends in LA, and my friend's partner showed me his phone. So I go back to the car, to the Secret Service detail to get my phone, and my phone is steaming. And I see a bunch of texts, 'Call Kamala, call Kamala.'" What, dude? It says, what? So notice he didn't say, "Kamala tried to call me," or "Kamala was blowing up my phone saying, call me." No, the text said, "Call Kamala." So not only was he at spin class with friends and his friend's partner showed him his phone, and his phone was steaming, but he and the interviewer started talking about the tight biking shorts that he was wearing that day. And then the next interview I saw, he's talking about Trump, and he looks up at the ceiling to do the flamer eye roll. Add a little lisp, and ladies and gents, I'm not saying he's bi-curious, because I'm pretty sure that dude satiated his curiosities. A few days after that, I saw that he quote-tweeted one of Kamala's posts where he and Barack, or no, she and Barack Obama are talking to Bruce Springsteen. And he says, he says to Barack Obama, like quote tweets the video, and he says, "You know I love you, Barack, but come on, it's the boss." And then Obama flirted back with him. Now, I don't know that they've had sex, but don't give me 4-to-1 odds on it either. Because I took 4-to-1 odds on the popular vote last week, and we ate chicken dinner at my house that night. And if you think I'm just being partisan, I'll say this. I always thought it was dumb for people to say that Barack Obama was Muslim. As if you can know someone's inner thoughts and prayers. That's not a thing. That's impossible. However, I do believe Obama is roughly about as Christian as Donald Trump. So for me to put my money where my mouth is, give me a parlay of Doug Imhoff and Tim Walz being gay, and then Obama and Trump being about equally Christian. That is to say, nearly not at all. And if the House offers a three-team parlay, I'll throw Hillary into the mix there. The only reason I'd have any concern that my parlay wouldn't hit is that I'd also bet that Trump got some God after his head tilt in Butler, PA. I mean, how could you not? Also, I shouldn't have to say this, but gay is not an insult. And if you're thinking, who is this know-it-all? What are his gaydar credentials? Well, I have yet to be wrong when trying to determine whether someone is straight or gay. And this is a skill I picked up early because even in elementary school, I knew who was going to be gay. Chad, Stevie, Ryan, they all came out years later. So I'm 100% on that. It's not what I'm most proud of, but hey, there's no heterosexual parade in my town, if you know what I mean. But I love the gays. I've got some good friends and family who are that. And my wife went trick-or-treating dressed as a rainbow this year. I posted pics of the fam from Halloween dressed up in my Instagram stories. I believe it was shared to Facebook too. I said that I insisted on being a lightning bolt this year, so the family had to rush to find costumes to accommodate the theme. So the wife was a rainbow and my little one was a unicorn. So yes, I love the gays. I also love the African Americans. My favorite one bought Twitter a couple years ago. I love the Hispanics, obviously. Asians, Indians, dot feather, no matter. None of that matters to me. I just love humanity. Oh, and like Trump, I love the uneducated too. So this year's presidential election, I believe, was too closely monitored by Republican observers and attorneys for there to be any sort of shenanigans. It all kind of went too smoothly, if you ask me. And I think knowing how closely the election would be monitored or scrutinized, I think they devised a different plan to take him out. So I hate to say it, but I think right now we're in the calm before the storm. Now, this is something I don't have 100% track record on this. This is me guessing, maybe an educated guess, but you know, if you were convinced that Trump was Hitler, would it not be your patriotic duty to prevent Hitler from taking office? I suggested in 2020 that that's what all that election was about. 81 million votes for Biden. I don't know. But couldn't you, I mean, if you were to prevent Hitler from taking office, could you not then convince yourself that you have good intentions? Which is what most leftism is about. What matters most is that you continue to think highly of yourself. You know, for example, you're more formally educated, emphasis on formally. You're more tolerant, compassionate. You're the champion of the downtrodden. Your intent is to help the greater good. Consequences be damned. Because to consider the results of your intentions Well, that would require another level of thought. And ain't no leftist got time for that. What do you think, their university degree taught them to think for themselves? That they're not easily propagandized? If this election cycle's taught us anything, it's that is not true. So I hope I'm wrong on this, but I said before the election that I can see Trump winning the election. But then, as now, I have a hard time seeing how they allow him to take office. I hear talk of, well, I've heard them say that they're going to abide. I heard Biden say that he's going to abide by a peaceful transfer of power. But if recent history has taught us anything, what they say and what they do are not the same. So I think there's work going on behind the scenes as we speak that is to contradict what they proclaim publicly. I listened to Donald Trump on Joe Rogan. And, you know, I was a little disappointed that he didn't ask him something about his food tasters. I mean, how much does he need to trust those in his inner circle, which is ever expanding? I'd be afraid to pee in the toilet, concerned that I might be electrocuted. If I'm Trump, I'm not peeing on Russian hookers. I'm giving golden showers to the plants 3 or 4 times a day, pissing the rose garden. But never in a Gatorade bottle, because your roommate, he might drink it in the morning. Or so I'm told. Where you at, Fadoo baby? I'm vanilla baby. I'll choke you, but I ain't no killer baby. Next topic. Do women like being choked? I'm kidding. Let us stay out of bedrooms, and not just as it pertains to gays, but all people's bedrooms. The Burger King bathroom, or the dressing room at Kohl's. Wherever you get down, let's stay out of it. Let people love who they want, as they say. It's funny, Dems thought that bringing out the twerkers and the twinks would persuade men. Or J-Lo, who, I mean, the only thing I want to hear out of her mouth is talk about the diddler, which she's not going to do, obviously. I heard they also tried to trot out Alanis Morissette. I read where she was supposed to endorse Kamala, but the check bounced because evidently she was paying like $1 million to Oprah and other people. I don't know if any of that's true, but Alanis Morissette's sole contribution to young men, at least when I was coming up, was something like, does this chick really like me if she's not willing to go down on me in a theater? But I mean, we can't even talk about politics without mentioning what a godsend Elon Musk has been to America and to free speech specifically. The day that dude acquired X should be celebrated forever after. Call it Free Speech Day or something. I believe it's in November, actually. We're coming up on the anniversary. Those of us who were censored are extremely grateful. My daughter and I, we were talking about mermaids the other day, and I asked her whether she thinks a fish knows it's in water. And it got me thinking about how much we've taken free speech for granted until it was taken away. I mean, if I worked in the corporate world, I don't know that I'd be sharing half the shit I share on the podcast. Especially, I wouldn't be writing the articles I write. Why do I? Or why can I share what I do? Well, one, because I'm more concerned about helping people, or let's say helping that one person who needs help, than I am about whether the other 9 like me. So that helps. Because truly, if I can help to significantly impact the life of one person, and then 9 others say, I don't like that guy, he's an idiot, I'm cool with that. But secondly, sometimes I think much of what I share is to ensure that I don't go back to the corporate world, because the money and the bennies can be quite tempting. But nobody's going to be eager to hire the guy who talks about how feminine men and masculine women have been ruining the country. I mean, can you imagine me on a Zoom call, like in an interview with some childless, unmarried HR woman in San Francisco who has ultimate authority over whether I get hired? I can share this because it happened to me. When I was considering going back to the software world, I dealt with this woman for which the C word was created. Her name was Laura Selig, and I share that name so that you can avoid her at all costs. She talked to me the way Leslie Stahl talked to Donald Trump on 60 Minutes. I mean, she didn't believe anything I had to say. It was so weird. And come to find out, she was lying to me, of course, right? That's how that works. So you'll live a much happier, more fulfilled life if you make it a rule of life to trust people who trust you. And the rest can, well, they can wash their own car. But going back to free speech, so I was in the Mekong Delta in South Vietnam with this little Vietnamese fella. And I had just been to the War Remnants Museum in Saigon, better known as Ho Chi Minh City. And holy propaganda. It is amazingly one-sided. Their interpretation of the Vietnam War is. I'm not saying we don't deserve some blame, but it gets wild in there. And if you talk about the American war while in Vietnam, they won't know what you're talking about. To them, it is known as the American War, in which they were victorious. Now, when I visit a place like Vietnam, my learning dial is turned up all the way. I mean, I want to learn and absorb as much knowledge as I can. That's probably what motivates me to travel so much. Well, when I was in the North, we stayed at this old man's house who had only one eye. So I asked our tour guide what happened, and she said that he had been shot in the American War. And knowing that we were American, he had told our tour guide in advance that there would be absolutely no talk about the war, which was a huge bummer for me because one of the cool takeaways from that that homestay was that we had a proper Vietnamese meal where everybody sits on the floor on a mat that kind of resembles woven blinds. It was one of the best meals I've ever had. And you get so full that after you're done, everybody lays on the mat afterward. And it's like the end of yoga class where you lay there and look at the ceiling, except everybody is super full. But I felt like I got shafted because I wanted to talk to the host about the war. I had visions of sipping rice wine till the wee hours of the morning, talking about Charlie and the Gulf of Tonkin. I mean, I wanted to get his take on all of that. You want to hear something crazy? When you go into people's houses in Vietnam, they all have a little shrine to Ho Chi Minh in their living room. And nobody laughs or thinks it's ridiculous. It is a very normal thing. It's no different than going to a departamento in Mexico and they've got a manger scene in the corner or a statue of Mary. But back to the little fella in the Mekong Delta. So I tried to have a conversation with him about their communist government. And he and I mean, we built a relationship. We'd already talked for several hours, so we were comfortable with each other. But with even the slightest mention of their government or communism, it was like I had said there's a wolf waiting for us behind that tree. I mean, he looked around and hurried up and got in my grill and was like, hey, we don't talk about that. This is not like your home country. And there was nobody within smelling distance of us. And it's like that in a lot of places around the world. I've had Russians on the podcast who have told me that the only thing that's off limits to talk about is anything about Putin or the Russian government. So free speech has to be protected by those of us willing to fight to the death to protect others' right to say anything they want. Even if you don't like what they're saying, especially if you don't like what they're saying. You know, something that'll be super interesting, if we have honest historians 100 years from now, something that'll be interesting will be seeing the two Trump tweets that ultimately got him banned from Twitter, because they are quite innocuous. All right, let's finish with kids say the darndest things. I say so much around our house. And, you know, I sing a lot. And occasionally I'll eat something that's spicy. And sometimes when I do, I'll quote the Bare Naked Ladies. So my wife is cooking something up in the kitchen the other night, and she gives my daughter a taste. First, she warns her that it's a little spicy, and she reminds her that, you know, you don't really like spicy. Are you sure you want a taste? So she gives her a little bite off the wooden spoon, and my daughter says, hot like wasabi when I bust rhymes. Big like Leanne Rhymes, because I'm all about value. That's right. I've inadvertently got my 3-year-old singing the Bare Naked Ladies. Thank you for tuning in, folks. I will chat with you next time.